Welcome to the South Shore's Morning News Weekend Review Podcast. I'm Rob Hackelow. Listen for the next 30 minutes as we take a look back at some of the big interviews from the week on the South Shore's Morning News, which airs live weekdays from 5 to 10 a.m. In this segment, we're going to talk about the Supreme Court hearing oral arguments in a blockbuster case over whether former President Donald Trump can be excluded from Colorado's primary ballot over his actions surrounding the attack on the Capitol on January 6th. And joining us now to discuss what we heard, we have CBS legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum. Thane, good morning.
Good morning, Rob. Good morning, Shukri.
Good morning.
Based on what we heard, we were talking about perhaps avoiding another civil war.
Yeah, I think that's what we did say yesterday. Well, the good news is that this was a sort of an unusual day in the Supreme Court because there was pretty fair unanimity among all the justices. I would be very surprised if there was a 6-3 decision here. I suspect that they will rule to overturn, invalidate Colorado's Supreme Court's decision to disqualify Donald Trump from their Republican primary. And I think that you might see 7-2 or 8-1, that even the liberal justices were very skeptical of what Colorado tried to do.
Yeah.
And I think that's, and the fact that you'll see liberals voting with them, I hope, avoid the civil war.
I think you're right, and we're hoping it wouldn't be just along lines, whether it be liberal or conservative. And I think I'll play the audio here, Thane, and then you can come and react from liberal Justice Lena Kagan. I think this is some audio here that's pretty powerful to listen to.
Most boldly, I think that the question that you have to confront is why a single state should decide who gets to be president of the United States. In other words, you know, this question of whether a former president is disqualified for insurrection to be president again is, you know, just say it. It sounds awfully national to me. So whatever means there are to enforce it would suggest that they have to be federal, national means. Why does, if you weren't from Colorado and you were from Wisconsin or you were from Michigan, and it really, you know, what the Michigan Secretary of State did is going to make the difference between, you know, whether candidate A is elected or candidate B is elected. I mean, that seems quite extraordinary, doesn't it?
And that's what we talked about, Thane. You mentioned where we were going to see perhaps a ripple effect in having all these states deciding who can be the candidate for president.
Right. I mean, there were 30 states that put this on ice, the decision, because there was really a split. There were three states that ruled that the president, that this remedy of disqualification could not be undertaken against the president of the United States. And then there was Colorado and Maine that said that they could. So the split was the reason why the Supreme Court needed to hear it. The question then became, what was most interesting to them? And that one of the things that came across there, you're quite right by using that clip, because what kept coming up back repeatedly was, you know, does a state court have the authority to implement this constitutional provision? That was sort of the flavor of the entire argument, right? Isn't it something that Congress should do? That a state could not be empowered to use the Constitution of the United States in this way. The other idea that came out is that they were interestingly looking at the language of the provision, and they said, well, there's a difference between holding office and running for office. The language in an amendment, 14th Amendment, talks about an office holder, holding office. Mm-hmm. And they definitely made a distinction that, you know, this is way too premature, that it could be a situation where Congress in the end decides not to allow Donald Trump to become president because he engaged in an insurrection. But this is, but Colorado is making a premature decision they're not even letting him run for the primary, right? So it doesn't say that you can prevent him from running from the office. It says you can stop him from holding his office. And so I think that was another thing that came out. That, you know, they on their own, they went ahead and just said, you can't even show up for the primary.
Yeah.
And so that was definitely something that came out in yesterday's argument.
Thane, I have a question. What I don't understand is that prior to now, prior to the 2024 elections, we have never seen anything like this in the history of the United States in terms of presidential elections. Our presidential candidate being kept off the ballots by respective states. You're seeing it now. And the question I'm asking is, why is this decision being made by each individual state seemingly instead of Congress making that decision? Do you think this sets a dangerous precedent moving forward historically for future presidential elections?
Well, the Trump team has been saying this about the various prosecutions and civil lawsuits also, right? That look at the different mechanisms that are being employed to make sure that Donald Trump can't return to the White House. This is really extraordinary. You've got all of these cases. You got like 80 different counts of criminality. You know, you've got cases in state court and federal court. And then you had these new attempts to just remove him from the ballot, and started out as a lawsuit. It was brought by a number of voters in Colorado that said, we want to have our court disqualify him from office. Donald Trump has been saying all along, he's used the term the weaponization of our Justice Department and our legal system. And this, I think, is certainly another attempt at that. Remember, the Founding Fathers, and you guys know this because you're Massachusetts, you take the Patriots very, very seriously. The Patriots, your founding fathers, literally your people, they felt very strongly about representative democracy. You know, they believed in the balance, the division of different, entities, the branches of government, checks and balances. But they really believed in representative democracy, individuals going to the polls and voting for their representatives. And so that I think was also on the minds of the Supreme Court, that you're actually going to, this is such an anti-democratic move, right? You can't run for the president. Forget it. Get away from us. We won't even let you run.
Yeah.
And I think that this is the kind of thing that John Adams, Sam Adams, Hancock, they would have gone nuts. What do you mean he can't run for the president? You don't have to vote for him. That's
exactly.
Something else.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that is something that I think the Supreme Court recognized. Do we want to be in a position? We didn't like what happened at Bush v. Gore. We don't want to be into the business of deciding who's the president. We think the people make those decisions.
Yeah.
And I think that what's happened is, there is clearly among Democrats, and you see this, you saw it with Hillary Clinton about the deplorables, half the country, and your state I think is in there, half the country thinks the other half is too stupid to make decisions. And this has really been this has come up again and again and again. Red states are looking at this and saying, they think of us as a bunch of country music, NASCAR watching, beer drinking, and they won't even let us vote for this guy. And that has been the theme, frankly, of the last, 8 years.
Hopefully the decision will come back soon. And you're saying it should be, at least from what we're hearing, it should be what maybe you said, 8-1 or 7-2?
It would be extraordinary, right, if it was unanimous. We'd never get you there. But I think there's a chance that might happen here.
Yeah, that would really be a great thing for putting it to bed. Because, again, as I was saying, it's not, it is about Donald Trump now. But you really just have to make sure that, just imagine, it's about the process itself as opposed to just making it about one man. Thane Rosenbaum, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
This South Shore's Morning News rolls on. I'm Rob Hackelow with the morning team. Every week at this time, we check in with our tech guy, David Snell from AxSmart IT in Wareham. David, good morning.
And good morning to you, Rob.
All right, so this week we're going to be talking about something Amazon has, and it's called Rufus. Is this real?
For real, that's the name. Interesting. The jury's still out on whether or not generative AI, is going to be a really game changer in technology. And every tech company in the world wants to get in on this, so now Amazon's taking their shot. This last Thursday, they announced Rufus. I'll tell you about the name in a minute.
Okay.
It's a new generative AI bot, what it calls a conversational shopping experience.
Conversational shopping experience. Okay.
Shopping experience. So this Rufus is a generative AI that's been trained on all of Amazon's products, shopping data, customer reviews, questions and answers, the whole catalog.
Oh.
And we're supposed to be able to ask it questions and get the answers we need in comparison between products and even suggestions for new products that we may not even have heard of before.
Okay. So is it
sounds
like
fascinating, doesn't it?
Well, is it like a store associate if you're going into a department store and, you know, saying, can you tell me about this product, or, you know, what is it good for and what are the reviews?
Pretty much. So this is going to have a lot more information at its beck and call than a store associate might have. You know, and Amazon says there's five cases. They highlight five cases. Learn more about a product or product category. Search for products based on occasion or purpose. So if, let's say I want a Valentine's Day present for my mother.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to find something, hopefully, that's going to work for my mom. Compare product categories. So you can decide between, say, a drip coffee maker or a pour-over coffee maker.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can ask for recommendations, which is the best option. And questions about a product or visiting that product's page. So if you're on a page looking at something, you can verbally ask, what's this about? What's going on here?
Okay. Interesting. Okay, so Rufus. Now, I mean, already with the internet, you could just Google and search for this type of stuff, right? But this is supposed to, you could have a conversation. Can you talk to it? Or
yes, you can. You'll be able to speak to it through your microphone or through your phone. Right now, it's only available on your smartphones.
Okay.
But that'll change in the future, I'm sure, because many people have built-in microphones on their computers, so it'll work for them. But right now, you can talk through your phone, just like talking to Siri or Alexa, except that you're talking to Rufus, who's going to be able to help you with your Amazon purchases.
Okay. So Rufus is there to obviously promote Amazon and to make sure you buy things. I mean, I guess that's obviously you're on that site, right? So that's how that would work?
Exactly. You're on the site, and Rufus is on you'll find it on the bottom of your browser of the page that you're on in Amazon. So that's where it gets kicked off.
Mm.
And it, you know, it seems very interesting. It's out in beta right now. It's not available to everybody, but we have a way for folks can try Amazon's Rufus just by updating your Amazon Prime account on your phone.
Hmm. Okay.
Once you update it, Rufus should show up as an option.
Wow. Okay. Well, here we go again, folks. This is the future. Here today, Rufus can help you out. So is it the same kind of thing in a store? You know, if you know, we bought too many of these coffee pots, that Rufus will push those because we got to get rid of. We overbought on them.
You and I are on the same wavelength here, Rob. I'm wondering if, in fact, when I'm looking for a coffee pot and they're going to promote the one to me that's the best profit margin for them.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, I mean, this is, I mean, sometimes that's what store associates we used to do, sure, at Caldor, but what the computer, I imagine, can do it even better. So it would know exactly what to push. So, I mean, I guess that's always the thing, because, you know, you want to know what is the best thing or the, you know, the best quality. And, you know, you always feel that
You know, there's an agenda, and I imagine with the computer, I can't imagine there'd be anything but an agenda, but I don't know.
No, I think you're right, and I think that's what we're going to find out as this moves forward. You know, you can turn Rufus off. You don't have to use it.
Yeah.
Or if you don't like what Rufus is telling you, you can just say, you know, go away, and I'm going to do my own shopping experience without your help. Thank you so much.
That's true. I suppose, yeah, it's just the, you know, can I help you kind of thing, and you're saying, no, I'm just browsing, and you're sure I can help you find anything if you need anything. Just ask. I'm going to be hanging around. No, I'm all
like
set.
A store.
Thank you. Okay. All right. So, well, you know, I mean, you know, who knows? I'm sure it's probably fun to play with, and maybe it could be helpful. I'm not sure. It's only the beginning, but as you said, they all got to get in on this.
Yeah, everybody wants their part of the AI pie. So, but let's talk about Rufus first.
Rufus, yeah, where'd that name come from?
Rufus was Amazon's first mascot. Amazon's dog-obsessed culture, which they do have, started with one impossibly cute corgi named Rufus. He was a regular around the office in the early days of Amazon.com, and this is interesting. Employees used his paw to click the computer mouse to launch some of the first pages in the store.
They used his paw?
They used his paw to click the mouse, yeah. It's interesting. When you're dog-centric, you do a lot of weird things, right?
Yeah. Well, I know. Yeah. I remember, I think, in the early days, I used to visit you guys. You used to have a dog come visit me.
Yep, that's right. And we've even had pictures of the dogs from our office clicking the mouse. So I guess it's standard in the industry for techno geeks.
It is.
But anyway, so Rufus belonged to Susan Benson, an Amazon's former editor-in-chief, and her husband, who was an engineer. And now, being so dog-centric, Amazon has 10,000 dogs registered to come to work at over 100 Amazon offices across the U.S. and Australia.
Wow. Well, I guess they probably have to pay them less than people. So, yeah, I guess that's why they... Oh, no, they're coming with people. Okay.
They're coming with people. So they're probably just getting their treats for free.
Well, why not? No, it's kind of interesting. I mean, but it's fascinating, the backstory, and they've got the dog culture, and I bet probably a lot of people love that part about the story. So that's why Rufus will live on, I guess.
Exactly right. Maybe they'll even have a picture of that dog as the Rufus icon. We'll have to wait and see.
All right. Well, David's got all the information on Rufus and how you can try it on Amazon. David, on your blog, right?
Absolutely. Go to AxSmartIT.com and click on my blog link.
AxSmartIT.com. AxSmartIT.com. David Snell, AxSmartIT in Wareham. Thank you, David.
Have a great day, Rob.
You too.
AxSmartIT.com. Time now for our segment sponsored by Coastal Heritage Bank. One community, many individuals, one bank that's perfect for you. Coastal Heritage Bank, growing together, member FDIC, member DIF. And here he is in studio, the chair and CEO of Coastal Heritage Bank. Great to have him back. It's Bob Terabecchia. Good morning, Bob.
Morning, Robert. Christine, how are you doing?
Good morning. Good to see you.
Good to be seen.
Thank you for the tea.
You're welcome.
Oh, yeah. And thank you very much, Bob, as well. This
Rob's
is great.
Third cup of coffee, Rob.
Yeah. Well, I need this after there was an incident this morning. But yeah, I'm doing much better now. Well, no, it was great. No, it was I'd asked for a tea earlier this morning. I had a black tea and then one with milk and one sugar. And then I opened it up and it was just a cup of milk.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, we all make mistakes, right?
And you know, we all need the calcium.
Yeah, we do.
So let's look at the good side.
It's a cup of milk with nothing else. All right. So here we are. Bob, it's great to have you in studio.
Thank you.
And as we mentioned, another special guest is here in the house as well. Right, Bob?
We have Michelle Badger, who is our executive director of the Massasoit Community College Foundation.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
You guys are both back because this has become a tradition. And we're talking about the Evening of Champions, supporting the General Scholarship Fund at Massasoit Community College. Right, Michelle?
Yeah, we're really excited to have our third annual Evening of Champions on March 23rd on our Brockton campus. And we're going to be honoring Bob Rivers this year as our education and community champion. And all of our proceeds and all the sponsorships are going to go towards our General Scholarship Fund, which is a change from in the past. But we've made a conscious decision as a foundation that we're going to rotate the funds that this supports.
Mm-hmm.
as we move forward. And, you know, the general scholarship fund allows us to be able to help more students, a variety of students. And there's really no other than financial need is the only thing that guides the general scholarship fund. So it's not a community you're from or any other kind of things. It's just, does a student need help? Does a student need
aid? So any student that would be in financial need?
Yes.
Okay.
Right. And, you know, Michelle, if I can just jump in here. I remember when you spoke last year, you really touched me with something you said. You gave an example of somebody who needed help from that fund. And I think it was something along the lines of somebody who had worked very hard, but they couldn't afford, I believe, the fee to take, was it to get their nursing license?
Yeah, and that was we did for our golf tournament, which is we've done in the past, which is our United Student Fund. And so that fund itself really helps our students be able to overcome the barriers that might be put in front of them, whether that's childcare, if that's, you know, paying some bill that the student can't afford, a cell phone bill, something like that, that allows that student to continue to work towards the goal of, you know, getting their education and doing and reaching their career and educational goals.
And, you know, one small thing like that, that's life-changing. I love that.
It really is. Mm-hmm. And that's what we try to do every day at the foundation. And that's why we're really lucky to have Bob as our chair and or our president and the rest of our, 16 members of our foundation board.
So the Evening of Champions, we want people to save this date, right, Michelle? Tell
yes.
us what's going to be happening that evening.
So on March 23rd from 6 to 9 o'clock, at 6 o'clock, we'll have a kind of a cocktail reception for a little bit. Then we'll go into dinner, and at the dinner, we'll hear from a student and a story that's been impacted by a scholarship. And this student is anything like last year. It is going to be moving, and it just really reminds you why you do what why we do what we do. To help our students really fulfill their dreams. And then we will also be honoring Bob Rivers as well, for all his work for the community.
All right. So that'll be coming up that evening?
Yeah. I've attended the last couple of occasions, the last 2 years. It's great. There's a great dinner.
Yeah.
It's a lot of energy in the room. I think we had several hundred people last year, if I remember.
Yep.
And it's just great. Networking opportunity.
Yeah,
we've had a lot of fun. Bob Rivers, who's a credible community advocate,
very charismatic
CEO and chair of Eastern Bank. And
yeah,
Bob grew up in Stoughton.
Did he?
So he's a local person. He's never forgotten his roots. As you know, as successful as he has been in his career, it's very befitting to honor him and you know his support. Mm-hmm. For organizations like Massasoit Community College.
Yeah, no, he's been very supportive of the college over the years, and so we're really excited to be able to honor him, and you know, through his good work and deeds, and our ability to honor him, we'll be able to help more students at our college. So it's really wonderful to be able to honor and also to support our students.
Oh, that's wonderful. Okay, so let's see. Are there still availability for people to go? Or
we do.
Do you want to encourage at this point?
Yeah, we have tickets and sponsorships. Our sponsorship deadline is March 8th, as well as our ticket deadline.
Mm-hmm.
So we are space is limited. We have a tiny space to work with, so we really hope that we will be able to get that. We know we will pack the room, especially for Bob and with all of our supporters. So March 8th, if you go to massasoit.edu/champions, mm-hmm. you can find out more about our sponsorships, our advertising opportunities, and our tickets. It's $125 per person.
Okay, Saturday, March 23rd, 6 to 9, and that's at the Massasoit campus in Brockton?
Yes.
Massasoit.edu/champions. Massasoit.edu/champions. This is the third annual Evening of Champions. As I said before, it's becoming a tradition and so many amazing stories and for such a great cause. Evening of Champions, Massasoit Community College.
It's a great night, and I'll tell you, it's 6 to 9, so like when we went last year, we went with mm-hmm. friends. We were still able to go out afterward.
Yeah.
So if, you know, you're thinking of something to do, it's still just the beginning of spring. You know, come on out. Let's honor a great patriot there, Bob Rivers, and let's make some money for Massasoit and really try to, you know, move the needle for these students and help them out. Any support you could give out there would be very, very appreciative. Our own Ed Perry is on the board
yes.
of the Foundation of Massasoit Community College, and Ed's a great contributor with his time and his expertise on radio. And
he is.
Thank
he
you,
is
Ed, for allowing us to be here today.
He certainly has been an advocate for education, that is for sure. Yeah. Massasoit.edu/champions. Don't miss out. Third annual Evening of Champions, Saturday, March 23rd in Massasoit in Brockton. Bob Taravecchia, Coastal Heritage Bank, and Michelle Badger from Massasoit. Oh, thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having us.
Well, as promised, on the line with us this morning, we do have the award-winning author, Hannah Kahn, is with us. She's the author of several books, and we are here to talk about her new book. It is called Drawing Dina, a middle-grade novel about a young Pakistani-American artist determined to manage her anxiety and forge her own creative path. Hannah Kahn is with us now to talk about the new book. Hannah, good morning, and thank you for being with us.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me on. It's a pleasure.
Oh, well, it's wonderful to have you on here to talk about this book. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself first, Hannah, and what led to writing this book, Drawing Dina?
Thank you. Well, I like Dina, I am a Pakistani-American Muslim child of immigrants, although my parents have been here in the country for many, many years. I was born and raised in Maryland, which is where I still live now, and I really wanted to explore some of the things that I'm grappling with now as an adult, you know, as somebody putting out creative work into the world like Dina, trying to manage increasing anxiety like Dina, and, you know, thinking about things like friendship and family relationships, and those are the types of themes I like to include in all of my books.
Well, I think, you know, I feel like almost, and not as though we planned it, you know, Hannah, to have you on the program today, but just out of the headlines, we were just talking a few minutes ago, and I'm sure you saw some of the testimony of the CEOs of all the tech giants that were on there, and the family members of those that have been directly impacted by social media on particularly young people, and how upset they are and how concerned they are about how to navigate through the world. So we've got a lot of issues when it comes to younger people today. Can you describe that and kind of how that plays into your character?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, as we know, all of us are grappling with how to manage our relationships with social media and, you know, some of the big issues around, you know, confidence and body image and bullying and all of those things. But, you know, as an adult, it's something that I still struggle with. And I really appreciate being able to examine these feelings and concerns through the eyes of a younger person who isn't jaded and doesn't have to pretend that she has it all figured out. And because she is new to social media, she's really questioning a lot of the things that, you know, we take for granted maybe when we've been on it for a while, or we just get sucked in and used to it. And she's questioning, you know, why am I feeling this way, or why, you know, why is this person following me and then unfollowing me, why do likes mean so much, and the comments and all of it, because we know it's having a big impact on kids, and it's something that they are struggling with along with the rest of us.
Yeah, and that brings up that question about, are young people today facing greater mental health challenges, or are we just more aware of them? A lot of our listeners texted in that say, yes, you could blame tech giants, but they say parents must also take responsibility. Any comments that you have on what you found in your research, Hannah?
Yeah, well, I mean, I do think it feels like both. Maybe that kids are more anxious today for the reasons we mentioned, but also we are paying more attention to it and perhaps diagnosing it more, which is a good thing. You know, it's a topic that's just really important to me, and I know that it's something that people and families are facing across the country. And it can be difficult to diagnose in kids, especially when the symptoms are so easy to confuse with something else. Like, you know, when it's a stomach ache, that could be for any number of reasons. And kids don't necessarily recognize the stressors that they have in their life. And adults can be really quick to dismiss them as, you know, oh, you're fine, or, you know, what could you be stressed about? And that's something that Dina's going through in the book, where she, you know, she's been feeling this way. She has these symptoms, but she doesn't attribute it to stress or to anxiety. And it takes a while for her to figure out what's going on. But I think that's what we all need to do is pay attention and be mindful of that possibility.
And tell me a little bit more about the character in Drawing Dina, about Dina. Also, this is a story about an immigrant family. How does that play into to someone young here in the United States?
Well, I think, you know, the reality is for many children of immigrants, like me many years ago, is that, you know, while your parents, of course, love you and take care of you, they sometimes don't know the best ways to help us because they're just not as familiar with the way things work here, or like within public schools in America, for example, the resources and services that are available, and there are many available to our kids, especially when they're dealing with mental health challenges. And so I think sometimes kids like Dina do have to advocate for themselves maybe a little bit more, or help their parents, you know, discover some of these things.
Yeah, I apologize there. I didn't realize how fast we've gone on. I know you've got a next interview to go. So, Hannah Kahn, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
All right. I wish we'd get into more, but boy, that time went by fast. Hannah Kahn has been with us this morning. You can learn more on her website, HENAKHAN.com. It's called Drawing Dina is the name of the book.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. As always, you can find us on your radio at 95.9 FM, mornings from 5 to 10, or online at 95.9WATD.com.
And you can catch up with us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can get the links at 95.9WATD.com/SS Morning News. And join us next week for another edition of the South Shore's Morning News Week in Review.